We are going to have some bill introduction, introduce two bills, LC 17, which is the revenue bill, the surcharge bill, and LC 9095, which is the in draft only, lots of blanks associated with it, disappropriation, omnibus disappropriation, appropriations bill. Representative Morgan, do you have a motion to that?
Which one would you like to start with?
Oh, let's go with the little number.
The little number?
17.
Mr. Chair, I move that LC 17 be accepted as a committee bill.
Representative Morgan has moved LC 17 be introduced to the committee. Any discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative.
Mr. Chairman, as committee bill introduction, my voting is a committee bill. It's not a statement of support or opposition.
Wow, what
is that? Hold on, we have a feeding frenzy going on.
Reminds me of the koi that I saw here.
Reminds me of the piranha.
Yeah.
Koi is a polite word, Representative. Representative Devlin has made his usual disclaimer. Could you just hold up an asterisk the next time we do this and we'll know?
Oh, we have one more to do.
Yeah. Representative Devlin has indicated that any support of this potential bill does not indicate necessarily support or opposition when the bill is discussed, and hopefully it's outside of committee.
Yes.
Any further discussion? Any objections? LC is introduced into the House Special Session Committee on Budget Restoration.
Mr. Chair.
Chair will entertain a motion.
I move LC 1995 be introduced as a committee bill.
Representative Morgan has moved LC 9095, the Omnibus Disappropriation Bill, be introduced into the committee. Any discussion? Representative Devlin?
Mr. Chairman, this bill actually has no numbers in it, so...
highly it's called We Have to Work It.
That's correct.
Like
so, but still,
30-minute speech on a bill that only has 10.
I could do that. I'd actually serve some purpose. But given
and
that,
hold on, the vote—you know—if you get too many people on one side of the room, the vote will count.
But Mr. Chairman, ditto my earlier comment.
Ditto the earlier comment. Representative Devlin has expressed the question, the opinion, that based on the introduction, who will support this, but it indicates no opposition or support when and if we get around to passing an amendment.
That's correct.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, LP 9095 is introducing budget restoration so ordered. I will now close the work session on LC 17 and, or I should say, the bill introduction on LC 17 and 1995, and open a public hearing on LC 17, the revenue bill. Since we do not have extensive sign-up sheets, is there anyone who wishes to testify with regard to all of the revenue designations we've been going through? We have a new rule. If you've testified here twice before, you're ineligible to testify on the first Sunday of any given month. So,
the second Sunday.
Well, everyone's eligible.
Change the rules.
Change the rules.
Second Sunday.
Robert, come ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members, Bob Refine, Director of Oregon Housing and Community Services. After extensively reviewing the bill, I'd like to, if you could give us a clarification on the LC 17, how much is that anticipated to raise via the tax?
I believe it's $362 million, but perhaps staff could come to the diet and give it.
I thought other people, I don't know.
Would you like to give us a summary on LC 17?
Mr. Chairman and committee members, just a quick summary on LC 17. We're increasing the top two personal income tax rates for 3 years beginning in 2002 if this is approved by voters in the November 2002 general election. And then what we see is that in 2002, single filers with taxable income then that's above $2,600 and less than $6,450, that 7% personal income tax rate is increased to 7.3%, which is a 4.3% change. And then for single filers with taxable income above $6,450, the 9% personal income tax rate then is increased to 9.6%. So that is to generate $395 million in 2002-03, 2003-04, it's $305 million, and 2004-05, $192 million, for total for the 2003-05 biennium of $497 million. So what you have also, just for your own information, is a breakdown, a distribution of the income tax returns. And in this table here, the changes is going from 7% to 7.3 and 9% to 9.6. As you can see, this is just 1 year. This is the tax year 2002. The majority, you're going to raise $277 million, and that's like the fourth column over there where it says change. That shows you how much change there will be by different income groups. So as you can see, the majority of the tax change is paid by those who are over $100,000 taxable income. So as you can see there, there's roughly from $100,000 to $200,000, they pay 17% of the tax. Over $200,000, they pay 22.4% of the tax. But the lower income categories do not pay hardly any of this tax increase.
Mr. Chair,
so am I reading this right, that there are actually income brackets that get a reduction? Is that possible?
Right, you're looking at a federal tax?
Oh, okay. Yeah, what we have here in the federal tax component is the first two categories of income brackets, that there are many times when they are going to be getting refunds, and it's such that they're going to have a negative income, and so they do get, they pay negative tax, they get refunds basically from the federal government. And that's just due to the various programs which are like refundable credits. And so this is such that those lower income brackets, when it comes to the federal tax amount, they don't pay any federal tax, they get, you know, checks from the federal government.
Chair, are those, Representative Bates, are those refunds going to be lower now because of this, or does it need to be the same?
Representative Bates, this does not change the federal tax amount at all. All we're doing is changing Oregon's tax amount. Now, there is a feedback effect in the sense that once you have higher Oregon taxes, then you're going to have lower federal taxes in the future. That you can deduct a higher amount that lowers your federal tax amount. This will not be changing then their federal tax amount because they don't have any taxes that they've been paying.
Okay.
Yeah, their tax amount has not gone up in Oregon from this tax change. Now, if your taxes do go up, then you will see a reduction in your overall taxes.
Thank you. Two questions, if I may. Elizabeth, when we see this again back in bill form, I would be interested in seeing a table like this for 2003, because we will have the refund, Oregon refundable earned income tax credit effective January 1 of 2003. So I'd be interested to see how that correlates with this adjustment in the rates.
Okay.
And also, just I think, and I wanted to clarify on the your preliminary measures, staff measure summary, revenue statements, revenue impact statements. I think there's an error in the table at the bottom that shows current law 9% for single filers above 12,900. That's correct for the joint.
And I didn't mention that with joint filers, all we're doing is doubling the single filers level. But yeah, I'll change that. Thank you. So with this, just one last point to clarify or make sure you're clear on this table. What you can get from this is the overall tax increase from this change from 7% to 7.3 and 9% to 9.6 is an overall increase of $175 on average for all tax returns. And that's just the increase in Oregon tax. Now, if you took into consideration then the reduction in the federal tax, you would have a you would have an increase of $150 on average. And in this table, the first set of columns here, the first rows are all returns, and then you come to single returns, and then the last group is the joint return. So you can see that that overall average does change a bit, you know, given single filers versus joint filers. Single filers on average are paying $90 of this tax increase. The joint filers are paying $246 on average of the Oregon state increase. And then of the, if you consider in then the federal tax reduction, you have $81 as an average for the single returns. You have $209 as an average tax increase with the federal tax reduction taken into consideration.
Representative Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the 0.3% increase on the 7% tax break, do you know what amount of money that represents?
Oh, you mean just the 7% alone?
No, the 7.3 of $395 million, how much would that represent?
Yeah, Representative Bates, I could sure run that, but I haven't, so I don't know off the top of my head.
As a follow-up, if you could have that figure, could you compute what that would cost to backfill with a corporate income tax increase?
Okay. What corporate tax increase level would give that same amount? Okay.
I think we're looking at around $12 million.
I think it's a small amount.
Mm-hmm. From corporate. The thing I find interesting is the 100 to 200, and then over 200,000, the percentage those guys are paying. Representative Devlin.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a clarification: for total income is total income and not either adjusted gross income or taxable income?
Representative Devlin, the total income here is adjusted gross income, federal adjusted gross income.
Okay.
So it does not include the credit.
And just clarification, too, I think obviously it would be a very small impact on the individual, that 3/10 of a point, because it's only going to apply a single between the ranges of $2,600 and $6,450 and a joint between $5,200 and $12,900. So it's not applying to very much income. It's probably $10 to $20 in actual tax differences on a single or joint.
Representative Devlin, I would just clarify, though, and make sure everybody's clear. This is everyone's income, right?
Right.
I mean, it's cumulative. It's not just those who fit in that category get the 7% rate. It's everyone,
right.
You know, that portion of your income. But you're right, that is not a big, you know, bracket. Any other questions on that? If not, just as a staff major summary, just for your own benefit, I did give you a little bit of background on the history of the personal income tax rates, and they have been in place at 5.79 since 1987. Prior to that, we had 7 personal income tax brackets that went from 4% to 10%. And then when we did have the recession, there was a progressive tax increase of the all of these rates from 4% to 10%, and I've laid that out for you. And again, all these brackets are indexed to inflation, so they do adjust upward each year.
Any other additional questions from the committee? Anyone in the audience wish to testify either in favor or against that question? And this is somewhat of a blank canvas, and so we're working through this together. So here comes, all right.
Bob Reba, Director of Oregon Housing Community Services. Mr. Chairman, maybe you could give us an explanation, or maybe I missed it possibly, why the declines in the tax revenues that would be collected between 2003 to 2004, which is 305, and then for the second half of that biennium,
what sheet are you working off of?
Off the front sheet of that was just handed out on the legislative impact.
Yeah.
It goes from, again, my assumption is, Mr. Chairman, is that the 395 is a larger number because it's retroactive to January of 2 this year through July of 03 next year. And then starting in July, the fiscal year, biennial, next session, the first half, first year will raise 305 in years OT3, OT4, and then go to 195 in OT4, OT5. And what's the difference? Why is there a difference in cash flow rate?
It's only 3 years. You're falling off in the biennium. Correct me if I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. But in the last year of 05, cash disappears.
At the calendar? It's the calendar year it ends.
And just to clarify, what this is based on the taxes or your liability is accrued in the tax year.
Mm-hmm.
So we are giving a tax increase for 2002, 2003, 2004. This is a fiscal year that you have here, so mm-hmm. You split up that tax liability. And in 2002, you're right, all of that would come in the 2002-03 fiscal year, as well as we separate this out with 40% of the tax liability is incurred in the current fiscal year, 60% in the following fiscal year. So then you break up that 2003 between 2002-03 and 2003-04. And in that case, 2002-03 has 40% of the tax liability in 2003. So basically, that's why you're seeing then in 2004-05 a reduction, because that's only 60% of the tax liability in 2004.
Mr. Chair,
Representative, so
Elizabeth,
does that answer your question, Bob?
Well, I want to pursue that too. Is that 60-40? Is that on account of higher withholding and estimated tax payments coming in during the calendar year, in which the tax increase is in place, even though the returns won't be filed until the next calendar year?
Representative, that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions? And Elizabeth is doing such a good job, I don't know why this other guy in the blue shirt showed up.
It's for evaluation.
Yeah. Team Word, we appreciate you being here. Any other questions on bill introduction? People smiling or people frowning? It's not like the word gets
shocked.
Kind of a mixed bag.
I think there's speechless, Mr.
4852. Which way?
Yeah. Speechless. They're all speechless out there.
Okay. We've got Mr. Nicelinger here, so we will close the public hearing on the introduction of LC-17. And we will open the public hearing on LC-95. Mr. Nicelinger. You come and give us some air-you-got comments on a bill that some may find a little vague.
Chair and committee members, LC-9095 is a blanket appropriation bill. This is a bill that's used in each of the sections where there's been any kind of transfers of funds, changes in limitations, or in general fund appropriations. And so this bill and its related clauses are necessary to carry out those kind of activities.
Could you talk a little longer?
Chair of committee, we will be talking subsequently about this when it's planned.
Anything else you'd like to flesh out about this bill?
It has an emergency clause, so whatever you do will take effect right away. So hope you act quick.
So this is staff this bill today and let us fill in the blanks for that. Actually, what we are doing in the process, and this is what I was trying to list it out of Larry, we are working a very bipartisan group comprised of some of the members of this committee. The are working to come up with a targeted cut list with greater or lesser degrees of success. And don't worry, every one of you in this room is absolutely devastated by it. I'm just telling you now. I'm being facetious. We're working on a specific cut list, and then we'll have a general omnibus across the board, what I call allocation approach to the reduction packages, however great those may be, and part of that is determined by how large the tax package is that's going to go out of here, which we, as well as you, don't know yet. So that's a little
little bit of the reason for the vagueness. I suppose this is your opportunity to come up and testify on behalf of your budget if you want to.
All the budgets are very well appreciated.
Well, Ozzy,
so far,
you've been around this process longer than I have, and I know you've been through more special sessions. Well, I got to tell you, after five of these and suffering the percent decline, there isn't anything good going to come out of it. I mean, don't look, you know, for any silver bullets or, you know, lifelines. I mean, we're down another $500 million late in the biennium, and it looks like we're going down again in November. And I mean, I've got one answer for the real long-term solution that we can count on: is jobs and economy, jobs and economy, jobs and economy. Yeah, we can tweak with tax structures, and we can augment this budget a little less and this one a little more. But at the end of the day, we've got to get Oregon back to work. End of editorial comment. See, right now, Lane Shetterly is giving a hoodie charge, $400, $500, $600 an hour.
At least.
At lunch.
At lunch. It's one of these self-fulfilling prophecies of failure. We pull Lane out of his office and the economy, you know, the revenue's going to itself.
Every day I work here, Mr. Chair, someone loses a job in my hand. I'm kidding.
I mentioned the across the board's allocation process. We have a methodology for that. I'm going to have Larry read some of these highlights. I don't think we're going to hand it out right here. This is still a work in progress. We're just trying to tell you everything we know to this juncture. We're not trying to hold anything back, but so much is subject to change. I don't want to hand out a piece of paper and the next thing you know, Ben, you said this and it was written there and it ended up being that. We're not going to put up with that. I mean, we're all in this together. And it's not an easy process. Uh-oh, I hope that doesn't mean the negotiating team is done for the night, that we're joined by the press. Well, since Larry's otherwise disposed, will be deposed by Representative Shetterly. What we're going to exclude from our allocation reductions are anything that involves debt service, capital projects, mandated service levels, either by the Constitution or the courts, savings that we've already gotten from delayed or phased in of new programs, anything that would incur an almost certain threat of legal action. We're going to go pretty hard on the allotment of unspent funds that are in these budgets. We're going to go fairly lightly on the constitutional offices, and by nature of the elected official, and look at things delicately that have, you know, federal funds attached to them as delicately as we can. You know, I'm not picking on the health plan here. It's a very large beast, and therefore it has very large amounts of federal funds associated with it. You know, when you've got something that large, that big a percent of our budget, we're going to end up getting in there. I mean, I'm not saying we're targeting it. It's just when you make those reductions, there's going to be some additional federal funds. So that's kind of where we are. I don't know if I explained that clearly. If you want to flesh anything out.
Yes, Chair and committee members, this was staff-initiated when we were discussing the concept of across-the-board cuts and reliance on it. There are several issues that come up in the administration of that. that, if you will, the devil's in the details, that there are unintended consequences that may occur. And so we're asked to look at what parameters we might consider providing to legislative leadership for discussion with the caucuses to enable the allotment process to be carried out without, and avoid some unintended consequences that Representative Westman has just outlined. So having said that, this is a draft. This is a work in progress. It hasn't been presented in detail to leadership, the caucus offices, and I'm sure it will be a matter of initiative. This is something that will start discussions of as to how this will be implemented if across the board ultimately are part of the plan.
Yeah, and I think part of this is not a castigation of the governor. You talk about doing allocations across the board or across the board cuts. There's a lot of latitude and a lot of leeway in there. And we take seriously the appropriations and the disappropriations we make. And when we're done, at the end of the day, we have a legislatively approved budget. And that's the intent, and that's the will of 90 publicly elected officials. And that's the intent that we expect to be expressed in when we say across the board cuts. It's one thing, sometimes convenient, to go in, and sometimes makes sense to go in and target a given line item. But that's not what this is about. What we're trying to do is take the appropriate end of the finger off all of the program as opposed to cutting off the hand. And that's the intent of this legislation. Bob, do you have something you want to say? Come on up. For the record.
Mr. Chair, Bob Cantine with the Association of Oregon County. Can you give us a sense of what flexibility there is in the cross-board cuts? Do they apply just at the level that is appropriated? For example, if we go into general session laws and we look in Department of Corrections, there's four or five categories. And across-the-board cut, authority of the governor would apply to those four or five categories, and underneath it, could he then, does he have lots of flexibility underneath that as long as, let's say, at the institutional level, he reduces it by X amount? How he does it underneath is his discretion.
What have I been saying for 15 minutes? Take Department of Corrections in, for example, if there are 37 line items in there, it has to come out of in a pro rata share, excepting debt service, federal mandates, court decisions, stuff we can't get to. I mean, it shouldn't be messing with. And there's going to be a given percent pro rata distribution that has to be applied not just to the agency, not just to the four divisions of that agency, but it has to be applied to every line item within the department.
Okay.
And I think that's what you want to hear.
Okay.
This is our proposal. By the way, in spite of what I said, we do look a heck of a lot better than that Paul Snyder, right? You know, I don't know. Am I confusing everybody on this? Am I just not explaining it very well? And we're trying to get to as true across the boards what you and I and our grandmothers would think of as across the board cuts, what that really means. Common sense definition. But to do it, we've got to have some fairly precise statutory language, and we have to have an exceptions process because you can't get in to every line item in exactly the same proportions. But the intent is to make it as honest and sincere as we possibly can. And there are going to be significant reductions in this package. I'm not kidding anybody. Any other questions? Anyone want to comment? Is everyone having a great Sunday? Questions of committee? If not, we will close the public hearing on LC 1995, and we will recess the committee at the call of the chair.